We are continuing, actually we are concluding another segment of this series called Rebranded. What we've done in this series is decided that the most important thing is not the name which we call ourselves, Christians, Christ followers, disciples, but it is the way in which we act. In fact, this is how Jesus defines what it means to follow him. He talked about being a disciple, being a follower. And so part of what we've done over this series is tried to address a number of different things that help us get to what it actually means to follow Jesus. And just a moment ago, this is going to conclude another segment of this because there is more for us to talk about. If you haven't been with us for the duration of this, this series stretches back into, I believe, the middle of the fall. Where we started, we spent 6 or 7 weeks talking about this. Then we took a break for Christmas, and now we are doing, this is the next segment of it. And the reason that it's in segments is because the further that we go, I'm starting to realize there's more and more for us to talk about that fits under this umbrella. So next week, we'll start a new series, and we will kind of unveil more of the discipleship program and all of those kind of things that you can participate in. But for today, we are I'm going to put a phrase out there that is probably going to stick with us. It'll probably show up again and again at different points in our future and maybe become a real catchphrase. Now, I'm just going to tell you right off the bat that there are several things that I'm going to say and several little catchphrases that may stick with you. Some of those things are not going to be earth-shattering. Then maybe you don't come expecting me to say anything earth-shattering. I don't know. But I'm going to give you some things some stuff that I'm going to say that's going to be like, yep, I already knew that. If you are the kind of person that likes the pithy saying, the little quote, the thing, that pithy not meaning unimportant, but short, easy to remember. If you kind of operate on those, you're going to love today because I'm going to give you several of these short little phrases that can stick with you beyond this morning. Here is the first one, and you're going to see this, and it's not going to be mind-blowing. It is going to be something that you recognize. Go ahead to that first slide. Life is better with room to breathe, right? Nobody's writing that down. We all kind of go, obviously, yes. I have in my closet a vest that does not, when I'm standing up, it's fine, right? Let's let that sink in for a minute. Anybody else have clothes like that? When you're standing up, it's fine. When I sit, it kind of stretches and it doesn't look great, all right? Now, this is not the fault of the vest, right? This vest has one of those little things that you can adjust it in the back. It's out as far as it goes. It is not the vest's fault. I can blame the vest, but I ultimately know when I look in the mirror, it's not the vest's fault. That vest doesn't give me a lot of room to breathe, so I have to be careful when I wear it. When I'm standing up, it looks fine, probably because I can hold it in a little bit better than when I'm sitting. When we have room to breathe in our clothing choices or just in general life, it is easier to get around, isn't it? It is easier to deal with when we have room to breathe. Life is just better. Now, for those of you that are visual learners, this will be particularly helpful. Go to that next slide. Anybody have a closet that looks like this? Yeah? Not very easy to deal with a closet. In fact, this young lady that is diving in, even though she's in the closet, she's probably not finding anything. Now, if your closet looks like this, that's one thing. But if your life in general looks like this, that is something entirely different, isn't it? That is a bit of a problem. Because you can maybe get around and work with a closet like this for a while. You cannot get by very long if your life looks like this, right? Now go to the next slide there. This particular closet, lots of room to breathe. Now those of you that are shoppers, I can already tell, thinking, they just need to go shopping. They don't have nearly enough to choose from, right? But if our lives, in a general sense, look like this, well, there's room to breathe. There's room to get around. There's a sense of organization. There is a sense of an ability to move through life and not be overwhelmed. Now, if our life, go back to the closet of chaos picture. If our lives look like this closet, there is a problem that needs to be addressed. And probably most of us, we would say, that closet that is neat and clean and there's space and I don't have to like dig through and tear stuff out to find whatever I'm going to wear, we would admit that's the ideal. Even if the closet has to get bigger in order to handle what's in there, that's the ideal. But for a lot of us, at least at different points and seasons in our lives, this is what our schedules look like, right? So jam-packed, you could not possibly get another thing in there. You could not possibly even get to all that is there. A schedule that can't take another thing and no spots for anything other than what is already there. It's not good. It doesn't work for very long. There's no room to breathe. Now, this morning, as I said, we're going to conclude this segment of the series, and I'm just going to put this out there. We're going to talk about something that is maybe going to make some of us kind of uncomfortable, but that's okay. I'm just going to say this. This is where we're headed, and we're going to let the tension kind of hang for us a little bit. This morning, we are going to talk about money. And some of you are thinking, well, there it is. I knew it. Eventually, he was going to ask for something. He's going to ask for us to give. Here's the deal on this morning. I am not asking anything of you this morning. Now, we're still going to take an offering for those of you that have partnered with the church and said, I want to give. But I'm not going to challenge you to begin giving or add to your giving. That's not what this morning is about at all. So those of you that might be a little bit nervous or thinking that the church is just after your money, you can your heart rate can go down, you can relax. I'm not asking anything of you this morning. Here's what I do, and I am going to ask. I want something for you. This is the same thing that I want for me. And we're going to get to that. I'm going to let that kind of question, okay, what is it that you want for us? We're not going to address that immediately. There's a little principle, like I said, you're going to love this if you operate on short little sayings that help you kind of get through the day. Here is another principle, something maybe you want to write down. But again, this is not earth-shattering. This will not, in and of itself, change your life. Here it is. Your time is limited. We all know that, right? And you cannot add to your time. None of us, though we may wish and hope for, we cannot borrow more hours from tomorrow and jam it into today, right? It's not possible. I wish that were true yesterday as we were driving back from Allen Park at the funeral home because it would have been nice to have a couple of extra hours instead of getting home at midnight. It would have been better to get home at, say, 10 or even 9 o'clock, but that is not how time works, right? We cannot borrow time from yesterday or tomorrow. We are stuck with today. This is all we get for today. Now, here's the thing. Your money is limited, but you are not limited what you can do with your money. Your money is limited, your time is money, your time is limited, but your money is not, you are not limited what you can do with your time, or with your money. I'm getting real confused and I'm probably not helping you guys either. Here's why you don't have to limit what you do with your money. We'll just cut right to the chase. You can borrow. Credit, right? If I want something, but my limited income says you cannot afford that something, I don't want to listen to that. I can go to the bank and borrow money against what I currently have and go ahead and become somewhat unlimited in what I want to do with my money. Right? There are any number of lending institutions, both locally and throughout the world, that will loan us huge amounts of money, right? This is part of what landed us in the financial situation of 2008 when there was the major collapse. Because we said, I don't want to be limited in what I can do with money. I will borrow whatever I need to. But when your financial life looks like the closet of chaos, every conversation is filled with stress, isn't it? Because it's about, we owe this much, but we only bring in this much. How are we going to deal with this thing that we owe, this amount? You don't enjoy the things that you have, and everything is filled with stress. Now, here's the skinny on what I'm going to tell you this morning, the things I'm going to share, just before we ever get to the Bible. If you are here this morning and you are not a follower of Jesus, what I'm going to share with you is just good advice. And you can take it from here and you can kind of go, I'm going to put some of that stuff into practice. But if you're a Christian, If you call yourself a disciple of Jesus, you and I cannot afford to miss this. There is something very meaningful, very powerful, very deep that Jesus talks about with money. In fact, if you have your Bibles, you might want to turn to Luke chapter 16. We're going to get there eventually, but some of you are wondering if we're going to talk about the Bible. Yes, we're going to talk about the Bible. It's going to be down the road a little bit, but if you're one of those type A, you've got to have it in place. Go ahead. Luke chapter 16 is where we're going to land. So if you're a Christ follower, disciple of Jesus, what we're going to talk about this morning is not an optional deal. It is not something you can go, okay, I will pick up part of what Jesus says, but that whole thing about money, can't do it. Don't want it. You and I, if we're followers of Jesus, if you're going to let Jesus be the Lord of your life, you have to have, and I have to have, a willingness to allow our financial house to come into order. And it doesn't have anything to do with giving. See, again, some of us are jumping right to that spot. Yeah, you are. You're going to ask us to give. No, I'm not. Not this morning. There might be another time that we talk about this. But what we're talking about right now is the condition of your heart in relation to the money that you and I earn and that God has kind of blessed and put in our lives. Here's another important principle. And this is maybe, again, this will not be something that is like mind-blowing, but it's something that I think can help us out. Go to that next slide there. There is a difference between your standard of living and your quality of life. Now, all of us, I think we read that, we see that on the screen, and we go, okay, yes, that is true. But here's the problem. Almost every commercial that we see and the culture that we live in says, no, there's not. Those two are the same. Standard of living, quality of life, those two are the exact same, because every time your standard of living goes up, you get a little bump in pay, you get a promotion, there is some sort of more that comes into your life. Culture says, don't save that. Saving is, that's boring. New car, boat, house, etc. Our culture says that your standard of living and your quality of life are synonymous, that they are inextricably linked. That if you are not happy, if your quality of life is not up where you think it should be, it probably has to do with the fact that you are not spending, earning and spending enough. That's kind of where our culture sits. That is how our culture thinks the message that they're kind of portraying. Now, here's how we know that the advertisers are wrong. There are some people, and maybe you're sitting here this morning, and your quality of life is very low. You are not enjoying the life that you are living, but your standard of living is higher than it has ever been. You're not enjoying things that you have kind of gathered around you, even though you have the ability to have more things around you than you've ever had in your life. Here's how I know. I'll just be very transparent with you. Last year, right about this time, Jenny and I were able to get entirely out of credit card debt. The only debt that we hold now are cars and student loans. That student loan thing is not going away. We'd just continue to pay on that for the rest of our lives, seems like. So last year we got out of debt, and I can remember, and a lot of the debt that we carried, almost all of it, was entirely our fault. There were some car repairs that had to be taken care of and those kind of things, and we've all been in those situations. But a lot of the debt that we carried was our own responsibilities. A trip here, a vacation there, something that we didn't necessarily need to buy, but we did go ahead and buy. I mean, it happens, right? And all of a sudden, you have this massive pile. I don't ever want to see anything from Wilmington, Delaware again. That was where one of the credit cards were coming from. Every time that would come to me, I'd be like, oh, again. When we got out of debt last year, some stress level dropped. If you've ever been through this, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because we were making more money than we ever had before, but our quality of life was low because the gap between what we made and what went out of our house was very small. So there is a difference between the standard of living and the quality of life. One of the ways that our culture says, you want to raise your standard of living? Debt. You just go and borrow something, you raise your standard of living, and that will improve your quality of life. But here is the truth. The only way that you and I will improve the quality of life that we experience, and this is not necessarily just a biblical principle, this is true in all areas of life. The only way increase the quality of life that we live in is through discipline. That we will look at what we have and say, something with this has got to change. That I need to change something about the way I spend or the places that I go or just the way that I kind of roll through money. Something has got to shift and change. But we don't like discipline very much. Debt seems much easier. Debt, there's a bill that comes in the mail and I just pay that bill and everything will be just fine. Discipline requires some work on our part. But think about this. If there is a God in heaven who loves you and I more than we could possibly imagine, if that God is really there, and I believe that He is there, and He loves us more than we could possibly imagine, what do we think is more important to Him? Our standard of living or our quality of life? Which one is more important to this God that cares about us more than we could possibly imagine? Let me ask this in a different way. If you're married, which would you rather have? A great marriage with not really that many toys, or a terrible marriage and really great cars? Be careful how you answer that. Because there are people trying to do that. They're trying to do that bad marriage with really great cars or great vacations or just an unbelievable house or a huge television. They're trying to do this. And the thing that they are finding out on a regular basis, I don't like it when she's home. Every time that I'm by myself, I'm kind of happy. And when she comes home, I find a way to leave. And you know what's happening? She's thinking the same thing. When he's home, I'm not that happy. And when he's gone, I'm okay. And if he comes home, I need to find something to do or someplace to go. There are people trying to figure out what they're doing is the same thing that all of us are doing. How do we understand the standard of living and our quality of life? How do those two things interplay with one another? How do those things, are they constantly at odds, or is there this marriage that can work between the quality of life and the standard of living? How is it that we walk through and work this out? How do we figure this out? Here is the difficult part, especially for us as Americans. To figure out the gap between the standard of living and the quality of life, that gap in our finances, how do we understand that? It could be creating room to breathe in your finances that you and I would have to lower our standard of living. As Americans, that is, man, that seems pretty difficult, right? Because debt is easier. I don't want to have to lower the things that I'm doing, not go on that vacation, not go to this place, not purchase this. But if you and I are willing to have a little bit of discipline come into our lives and allow our standard of living to come down, there will be greater room to breathe and things will get a little bit easier. If you're willing to do this, your standard of living may come down, but it's going to raise your quality of life. Now again, if you sit here not as a follower of Jesus, you can say, you know what, that's good advice. That is, I can take that home and I can actually put that into play. But if you are a Christian, you and I cannot afford to miss this. Because this is a critical piece of what it means to follow Jesus. Is Christ involved in the everything of my life, including my own finances? Including that place that we don't necessarily like to talk about. Here's three things that I know are true of me there. I think they're true of you as well. In fact, go ahead to that next slide there. Three things that I know are true. You are living on a percentage of your income. I mean, again, that's not like earth-shattering. We know that, right? Just by looking at that statement, yeah, okay, I'm living on a percentage of my income. Maybe it is 100% of my income, and that's what I'm living on, or maybe it's somewhere below that. But here's perhaps the important piece about that. Most of us do not know what the percentage is. Most of us look at that and go, okay, that is true, but if I was pressed on giving a number, it would be a total guess at this point. What percentage of income am I actually living on? And if you don't pick a percentage, something else will. Car dealership, a real estate agent, the mall. Something else will kind of come in and fill that gap and say, well, you don't even know what you're living on. You could squeeze it this month. You could do a little bit more this month. You could spend a little bit more this month. Here's the last two. These two relate to one another. If we had a little bit more, things would be just fine. Anybody ever said that? If I could just get a raise, if I could just get a new job, if I could just get a little bit of bump, everything would be just fine. And the last one, you felt the same way, I felt the same way before we made the money that we make now. Just think about this. If you could go back in time, I was thinking about this myself this morning as I was driving up to North Bradley. If you could go back in time and tell me in 1998 when I got my first ministry job, doing youth ministry, and tell me that I would be making the money that I do today, right now, and that I would still feel some financial pressure, I would have laughed. No way possible. No way. How could that be? Because we all think if I just had a little bit more, everything would be fine. Everything would kind of level out. Everything would kind of even out, and I would have the money to do what I need to do. Here is the issue. Whenever there is a little bit of a bump, the culture gets into our hearts and minds and says, well, now, initially you go, okay, we can relax. We're going to be able to pay this thing off, and we're going to get out of debt there, and we can relax. And what happens is, that little lie that says, well, but you can close the gap a little bit more and you can spend a little bit more. Here's something that happened to Jenny and I last winter when we got out of debt and paid off the last little bit of the credit card debt that we owed. We were spending about $300 a month paying that last bill off. And when that last bill was paid off, we said, this is going to be great. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take some of that money, we're going to put it off into this account, and then some of that money is going to be put into this account. And you know what happened? That happened for a little bit of time. But eventually, the gap between what we had coming in and what we were spending was closing. Because it was easier to say, okay, we can relax a little bit. Let's go out to eat again. Here's the part of the issue, especially when you have kids that are growing. We had to spend a load of money on Ethan this past fall because he will not stop growing. We have asked him to slow it down, and he won't do it. Shoes and pants and shirts and all kinds of stuff. It's just every time you turn around, hey, I outgrew this, and we tell him to stop it, and he won't stop. So there are some things that you and I cannot avoid. There are some things that these are expenses that are a part of having a family. But if we really got down to it, there would be some places we would say, you know, we ate out 5 times last month. That's more than once a week. That's probably too much. Because it is easier when you have a little bit of extra. When you have a little bit of extra, it is easier to say, let's just use the food thing, for example. It is easier to go out to eat and go down, and you can even convince yourself, well, I'm patronizing a local restaurant, and that is a good thing. And it is a good thing. But it's easier to do that than to go home and make the food that is sitting in your freezer or refrigerator. It just is, right? So when you have a little bit of extra, some of that gets sucked up really quickly. So back to those of us that are visual learners. Go to the next slide there. I am a visual learner, so maybe this is more for me than anybody else, but that's fine. I'm talking right now. So the graph, the vertical line is money. The horizontal line is time. I told you what I'm going to share with you is not mind-blowing. It is very simple. The orange line is the money you make. And maybe yours doesn't go straight up. It probably is more jagged. I can attest to that as well. The orange line is the money you make. The blue line is the money you spend. Very simple graph, right? Go to the next slide. One more. That space in between the orange line and the blue line, this is the room to breathe. And if you and I do not establish the percentage of income that we're going to live on, those lines will never get very far apart and there will not be much room to breathe. So this is part of the discipline that is so difficult for us. And I admit, I am one of the ones, I struggle with this. I don't particularly like numbers anyway, so spending a lot of time with numbers and looking at receipts is just kind of like, I want to stab myself in the eye with a pencil. I mean, it is brutal, but it is the discipline that is absolutely required if we are going to become the kind of people that God is desiring us to become. That room to breathe and identifying that is absolutely critical. So if you and I live life like that closet of chaos and things are just completely jam-packed, and there's no room to breathe, it will have an impact on everything else that we do. And what happens is we become a slave to the lifestyle that we have created. You and I have voluntarily stepped into a form of slavery. Because when an opportunity would come before us, we would say, I would love to do that, but you know what? Visa won't let me. My mortgage will not let me. My car payments will not let me. I would love to step into that, but there is an institution that I owe far too much money to, and I have to say no to all of those things. We become a slave to the credit card company, to the lending institution. But here's the truth about all those lending institutions, and we could blame them and say, well, how dare they charge such exorbitant percentage rates, interest rates, right? I mean, it's easy to put it on somebody else. Here's the truth about those institutions. They do not want to be your master. They don't. They are there to help facilitate some of your happiness, but they do not want to be your master. But when your financial life looks like the closet of chaos, you end up hating them. And you don't even know who them is. Especially if they're sending you stuff from Delaware or some other place that houses your loan. They don't even know who you are. They have just begun to be able to control too much of your life and you hate them. Now, every decision is compromised. I can't go there. I can't buy that. I can't support that missionary. I can't do that really good thing because some institution, lending institution, is running your life. And again, it's easy to play the blame game. Well, you know, if it weren't for that former president, if it weren't for the current president, if it weren't for, let's just throw the future president into that because it'll be his fault when he gets there too. Right? Don't we do this? Very easy to blame somebody else, but by and large, for the most part, it is us. We are the ones who have walked into that kind of relationship willingly. It's time for us to begin to take some responsibility for us. Now again, if you are a Christian, it is so important that we not miss this. Because this impacts the way in which we are able to live. Because God is going to ask some things of your life. If you and I get truly serious and we really press into God, and you know, next week we're going to talk about the launch of this whole discipleship deal. And if you and I take that seriously and we pour our lives into someone else, there will be places along the way as God says, I want more of your life. I want you to come closer to me. There will be places in our lives that he's going to say, and what about some generosity in this place? And we, if we have not dealt with this issue of our financial lives and the closet of chaos that some of us are living in, if we have not dealt with that and made a plan to get out of that, we are going to have to say no to God. We're going to have to say, you know what, I would love God to give to that. I would love to help support that thing that's going on, but Visa won't let me. My house payment won't let me. I want to follow Jesus, and he is going to, if you want to follow Jesus, he's going to get into your life and desire some things of you to rearrange some priorities for us, including our finances. So in case you were wondering if I forgot about Scripture, no. Luke chapter 16. This is Jesus. He's told this story about the shrewd moneylender. He's told this interesting story, and we're not even going to talk in detail about this parable. This is one of those parables that's kind of confusing. You have to spend some time with. But here's what Jesus says at the very end. In verse 13, he kind of draws a conclusion. This is what he says. No servant can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, if you pull that one verse out of context, can't serve both God and money. Would it have been better if Jesus would have said, you cannot serve both God and Satan? I mean, that's kind of the church answer, right? God and Satan. This doesn't have anything to do with money. Jesus, why didn't you just say God and Satan? I mean, Jesus would probably agree with that. You can't serve both God and the devil. He's talking about money here. And what he's doing is he's drawing a conclusion that says, you and I will find ourselves in a situation at different points in our lives where our desires, the desires of our hearts, the devotion to God, this will be strained and stretched. And if you and I have so much committed, so much of our income committed to where there is no breathing room, eventually there will come a place in your life, in mine, this is absolutely true, where you and I will have to make a decision. Who gets the best of me? Is it Visa or is it God? And what Jesus is saying here, you cannot be fully devoted to two things. If money is your master and you've borrowed and spent your way into slavery, your heart is going to be challenged. And maybe you'll be sitting in a service like this, or you'll be somewhere maybe downtown, and you'll know that someone is in need, or there's a missionary getting ready to go overseas, and that your heart is pulled. And God is saying, wouldn't it be great if you could give to that thing? If you could help, I want to just bless their socks off. But you know what? I can't, because there's no breathing room in my financial life. None whatsoever. This is what Jesus is talking about. He is saying that you and I cannot have our hearts divided between Him and our finances. It cannot happen. And here's the rub with this series, and maybe this is a difficult conversation for us. I'll just tell you the truth. Let me be, again, a little bit more transparent. Even driving up to North Bradley this morning, before I gave this message there, and even as I came down here before arriving in St. Louis, boy, there was a big argument just happening inside of my soul, because I don't want to talk about this. This isn't as much fun. I mean, here we are in church, and wouldn't it be great if we could just talk about like spiritual stuff? We could talk about how great God is and how much God loves us and all of those kind of enjoyable, happy conversations. But here we are talking about money. And the reason that this fits into, see, this is just one of those God things, that God pulls these things together long before I really even have an understanding of what we're going to be talking about. This is hard, because for most of us sitting here, and I'm going to get to a couple of very practical steps, and this might really be where it rubs us difficult. If we are to become the kind of disciples that Jesus desires of us, if we're going to become the kind of people that have great influence in the work world and in our neighborhoods and in our families, this is something that has to be dealt with. Our financial peace. An understanding of what God has for us. See, because this is another reason that this conversation fits into the whole of this series about being a disciple of Jesus. We talked at length about this last week. The New Testament and the letters to the early church are filled with a phrase, one another. Remember talking about this last week, that the things that Paul and James and the other writers of some of those letters talk to the early church, and they say, you are responsible to one another, to bear with one another's burdens, to love one another, to care for one another, to be patient and kind with one another, to carry each other's burdens, to forgive each other. The problem is this: if your life and my financial life look like the closet of chaos, we will have a very difficult time doing the one another's. We will have a very difficult time enduring and putting up with and bearing one another's burdens, because every conversation that you have becomes about you and the difficulty that you are having. I understand this. So again, I don't talk about this from a lofty position. We were just in this place not so long ago, where the bills that were coming in were very stressful. They were filled with difficulty and heartache, because we're like, man, there is so much money just going out of this house that we cannot even begin to think about being generous in another place. That's a frustrating experience. So I don't talk about this from a place of, watch me, I know what I'm doing. I'm not so sure that I know what I'm doing, okay? So I'm not asking you to pay attention to me. I'm simply saying there is something that Jesus has tapped into that is backed up throughout Scripture, that if any piece of our lives are pulled away from Him, if our hearts are challenged at all, it is going to be difficult for us to become the kind of church that Jesus had in mind. That's why I'm not asking anything of you today. If you're a giver, we're going to take an offering later like we usually do. And if you've decided to partner with the church and you're giving of your tithes and offerings, that's great. I'm not asking you to stop doing that. And if this causes you to ramp up what you're giving or begin giving, that's great. We're not going to stop that. But that's not the purpose of what we're talking about this morning. God says, I want your hearts, every piece of it. And if your hearts are compromised and pulled apart because there isn't any room to breathe, well, that's problematic. Because in the room to breathe, we find peace and the ability to love others better. Our relationships are better. Remember, the standard of living and the quality of life are not the same thing. They are not tied together. So at the risk of being, I told you this was going to be somewhat simplistic, especially to end this, there are three steps that I'm going to give you. And again, this will not be something that is like mind-blowing. You're going to look at these and go, that makes a lot of sense. So the first step is this. Go to the next slide there. The first step is that you need to decide. If you're sitting here this morning and going, you know, there's a lot of truth to what I'm hearing. I feel like God is asking me and pushing on me to change some things. You simply have to decide. You simply have to be, see, whenever we say, you know what, I need to eat better and I need to work out. There isn't a single person who says that, says, I don't know how to do that. I mean, I would do it, but I just don't know how, right? Nobody says that. You can watch TV and just watch commercials and understand how to eat better and how to work out, right? So you don't need anybody to explain that to you. I think this is kind of the same thing. You know where you sit financially and that something probably needs to change, but it is that first step of decision that says, it happens now. We are making steps. We are going towards that thing right now. We are making some changes. So the first step is you have to decide. The second step is you need to create a breathing room goal. This goes back to the percentage of income that we all live on. And maybe the percentage is very close to what we make. We live on, we make this much. This is 100% of what we make. And our what we're living on is like at 90%. There is not a lot of breathing room. So maybe you need to say, you know what, I want to bring that down. I would like to have some more breathing room. What if we said we're at 90% of what we make? What if we tried to bring that down to 80%? Just create a little bit of space. And here's the other thing, and this is the hard one. This is, as Jenny and I were driving back from Allen Park last night, we were talking about this. And we were both in agreement until I kind of said, this is the last step, that we need to spy on our money for 2 months. And we both kind of went, ugh. Because that's receipts. That's keeping track of everything. That's writing stuff down. Either you create a spreadsheet on a computer or you just have a logbook and you write down everything. This is the hard part. This is the discipline piece that comes in. Because if I'm going to understand, if I want to change some habits, I better understand what I'm spending my money on, right? Because we can do the first two and say, obviously, yes, I'm going to decide, I'm deciding today that this has changed, that this is different, and I want to create some space. I want to create some breathing room in our budget. But here is the problem. If I don't know how much I'm spending, I'm not going to really be able to achieve whatever goal that I have set, right? Again, this is not earth-shattering stuff, but maybe these are things that need to be said out loud for us to really get a hold of them. So I want to challenge you, and we're going to do this. Spy on your money for 2 months. You might be surprised at where your money is going. I know I just am positive we're going to be surprised. There's going to be some shocks of like, man, I didn't know we did that much. And then from that you say, well, what do we need to do to get to this percentage of our income? Well, here's the receipts. This is what it looks like every month, what we spend. We can stop doing that. We can stop going to there. We cannot do that as much. And eventually, the numbers start to change. If we're going to be the kind of people, and I'm not talking about the church at this point. We're actually starting the series next week is all about what it means to be the church. This has been about what it means to be an individual follower of Jesus, a disciple. So if we're going to be the kind of people that God has this great ability to use, we have to be honest about every piece of our lives, including the difficult conversation about our money. Again, I want to be really clear on this. I don't stand up here telling you this from a position of superiority. We just got out of some major debt, and we kind of made an agreement. You know what? We are not letting that happen again. So there have been credit cards that have come in the mail, and they go right in the trash. Because it is too easy to lose control of those things. I want to challenge you this morning to be honest about this. To maybe just write these things down and start to have an honest conversation, you and your checkbook, and if you're married, your spouse, or whomever it is that you share money with. Let's be honest about what is going on. Maybe you'll find yourself going, you know what? There is some significant breathing room here that we didn't even realize. And we need to be open to the generosity that God is going to ask of our lives, because here's the other thing about our finances. There has to come a place in our hearts where we realize this money that I have from the job that I have or the retirement that I earned, it is not even mine. It belongs to God. And there has to be some place of generosity that flows out of me. Because I think that's one of the next steps that begins to happen. We're honest with our finances. God says, okay, because of what you have, I'm going to ask you to bless someone else in part. So I want to invite you to a place that allows your heart to be quiet enough, to be still enough to hear this from God. And we're going to pray and we're going to sing. And I just want to remind you, this altar is open. You are welcome to come up here at any point during the service when we're singing or praying. This place is open. And so maybe this morning, that is where you need to find yourself, is right down here just praying and saying, God, this is my decision point. I am making a choice right now. Something has to change, but I'm deciding right now. Instead of just going home and letting this kind of roll around inside of me, this needs to change, and I am deciding now, making a physical decision. You can certainly do that sitting at your pew in your row. There's nothing wrong with that. But for some of us, the physical act of getting up and coming, that's important. So like I said, we're going to pray, we're going to sing, and I just want to give some space for you to talk with God. Because for some of us, this is a difficult conversation because we've known for a while something has to change. Maybe this is the beginning spot where you decide it changes beginning now. Heavenly Father, as we close this portion of our time together this morning, as we kind of shift gears and we're going to spend some time in worship of you, and we're going to acknowledge how great and wonderful you are and how much you love us. So let there be no doubt in our hearts as we sing and we worship you. But God, we also don't want to miss you in the midst of this moment. For some of us, this is like watershed moments, because we've known for a while something needs to change, something has to shift, and we've just kind of resisted and pushed away from it. Some of us recognize that there is a debt that we are carrying and that needs to shift. Father, whatever the situation is, whatever it is that we are wrestling with, we just ask, God, that you would have the space in our hearts to speak to us, that we would not resist. Maybe some of us, this has been an ongoing conversation with you, that you have been kind of poking us in the heart about this before, and we've pushed away from it. May that not be the case this morning. May instead, Father, we respond to you. You've called us by name. Your presence is here. May we run toward you instead of away from you. Father, this is what we ask this morning. Speak to us. Call us by name. In Jesus' name, amen.